Welcome to the StarTrek.com audio commentary for the episode North Star. This is Tim Gaskell, editorial director for StarTrek.com. Our special guest is David A. Goodman, producer on Enterprise and the writer of this episode.
Thank you, Tim. Great to be here.
North Star is production number 61 out of 98 in total when all was said and done. This was a season 3 episode, episode 9 of season 3.
Start playing the episode now. When we were breaking the stories for season 3, as you know, the Zindi arc was dominant, and Brannon thought it would be a good idea to have a couple of non-Zindi episodes, at least in the pipeline, so that in case they decided after 5 episodes we'd had enough of the Zindi and decided to end it early, we'd have something else.
It certainly breaks it up.
It certainly does. So, beginning of the year, we all sort of wrote down our story pitches for the year, and I take great pride in the fact that I came up with this one.
And this is not, by the way, the opening scene from the first episode of Deadwood. This is North Star.
Well, there's no F word and N word and cussing in this. Anyway, actually that shot of the guy in the news had to be reshot or relit. Or enhanced, I think, actually digitally, so that you could tell that he was an alien. So anyway, at the beginning of the season, it was a little too dark. The beginning of the season, we all wrote some story ideas, both Zindi stories and non-Zindi stories. And Brannon sort of laid out a challenge, too. He wanted the show to get back to sort of old Star Trek roots of original series. He said to the staff in general, anybody wants to come with a parallel Earth idea, we're open to it, but it's got to work for our show. And, of course, those were always my favorite episodes of the original series, you know, an amazing example of Hodgkin's Law of parallel planet development, or John Gill making his planet of Nazis. You know, those were great classic shows.
Simply a book.
Simply a book about gangs. That was a convention of the 1960s. That's how Gene Roddenberry sold the show. I'm sure everybody already knows this, that by making use of standard costumes, he came up with a parallel Earth to save on budget costumes and sets and that kind of thing, and we don't need to do that anymore, so the story needs to work on its own. So I came up with this story. The one-liner of it was a group of aliens sometime in the past took a group of humans to be their slaves, and they didn't know who they were messing with, and the humans revolted, and now Enterprise goes to this planet that has set up a medieval planet or Roman planet or Western. I sort of gave Brannon a choice. And I put that in my pitch, and Brannon took it to Rick, and Rick said, go with God. He loved that idea. And Brannon liked the Cowboys. He liked the Cowboys at least when the story got approved. So North Star, just to talk about the title, North Star was actually supposed to be the name of the town. We never actually say that in the course of the episode, the final cut of the episode. But what's great about the title that I loved about the title was it's sci-fi and Western at the same time. Star is, you know, you follow the North Star, is a very kind of Western idea, but also the North Star is a star. Anyway, so that it kind of worked both ways. This is Glenn Morshower playing the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn's
been in everything, basically, from Pearl Harbor, The Island, Black Hawk Down, 24, right, and even Deadwood.
And he's also been on the Bridge of the Enterprise in Peak Performance, got a small role in there, and was just great in this episode, very naturalistic acting. Mm-hmm. I'll get back to the development of North Star in a minute. It was in starting the show, I wrestled with how to have Enterprise find this planet, and I thought again of the original series, that I think the opening of Return of the Archons, Sulu and I think the character's name is O'Neill, are already there on the planet in costume being chased, and I always loved that idea. It's not one of my favorite episodes, but always loved the idea
opening of
them already being there.
Yeah.
And in costume, and it's a great way to sort of get the exposition out without sort of saying, planet of cowboys in the middle of the expanse? We'd better beam down and check it out. So, you know, we get all this important information out. The buildings have been there for 200 years. It's about 6,000 people. The original story, which again, sort of, we ended up dropping for time, was this was a wagon train that was spirited away, which I thought was kind of cool, and that you'd have a group of people who...
And then it really would be a wagon train to the stars.
There you go. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. And the idea also, though, is a wagon train wouldn't be missed by anybody. That a wagon train going out in the West, if they were picked up by a bunch of aliens, there'd be no record of it. They'd just be one more lost wagon train on the trail, which I thought would be kind of fun. And then they get deposited here and build their own little Western town.
Speaking of Western town, that is Universal Studios.
This is Universal Backlot. I think if you go out of this barn and make a right...
You go to Desperate Housewives.
Actually, the Jaws ride.
Oh, the Jaws ride, yes.
is right there. I visited the set with my son, and then we went and stood next to the big hanging shark. It was very exciting. David Strayton's the director of this, and he just had a field day. I mean, I'll be honest, when I wrote this script, I was picturing the Big Valley. I mean, it's an old Western from the 60s. I mean, really bright colors and just some horses and cowboy hats. And this is like Unforgiven. I mean, these long shots and the costumes and the lighting, and then also the lighting, the exposure that he used to give this sense of this alien planet, this Western town on the alien planet. I mean, just a really... really worked hard to make this like a special episode. We rarely go on location with Enterprises. Everything's usually done on set. Some of the stuff on this episode, the alien ship, is a set. But we're out on location here, or at least we're out in a back lot, and he really made it worthwhile. I mean, the money is well spent. There's a Trip giving away his harmonica, which was a little in-joke with the writers because we didn't like the harmonica. So... He's
giving it's one way to get rid of it.
He plays it in Precious Cargo, my first episode of Enterprise, which, I'll be honest, I've never seen because it didn't turn out too well. But you may edit that out. Originally, he just trades the harmonica for the horse in the original draft, just because I thought it might be interesting that there were no harmonicas on this planet, so this guy's got something... the guy's never seen before, but Connor, I think rightly so, felt he kind of looked foolish thinking he could get a horse
with just a harmonica.
And so the borrowing and the whole thing. It's a nice little bit here with him and Tabal and the horse. He's underplaying the humor, I think, very well here.
But she gets on this very smoothly. I like the way she actually mounts the horse. If you watch
yes,
here.
Yes.
She has a nice...
well, she probably used to ride her pet Salot back on Vulcan, very similar kind of animal. There we go. Watch this.
I'm just wondering if she had any help. But
there's probably a step stool there.
Yeah.
I can't believe. Well, you never know.
Or so it's a short horse. A
nice little bit here. He's got a little Stan Laurel thing going on his face. Yeah. He's
Connor, we talked a lot about Scott before being a great actor, but we forget how great Connor is as well.
Yeah, no, Connor is just tremendous. So I think I'll go back to talking about how I developed the story. So Brannon and Rick signed off on the story, and then the staff was pretty involved in developing the Zindi stories and Zindi arc, and I was involved. I helped write a lot of those stories, too. But my first script was going to be North Star, and somewhere between the time I pitched it and the time Rick approved it, Brannon really decided he didn't like it. So he kept putting it off. He didn't want to do it. But finally, as happens on all shows, you run out of scripts, and he finally had to let me write it. But I think he was worried about it coming off being hokey, and I don't think those fears were necessarily ungrounded. This could have easily been a terrible episode. Cooper Smith, little in-joke for older television fans, talking about that wagon train. Cooper Smith was one of the main characters on the television series Wagon Train.
There you go.
He led the wagon train on Wagon Train, so I thought he led this wagon train, and guess what? That wagon train, the reason Wagon Train never made it anywhere was because they went to an alien planet.
That's Paul Ray, the bartender, by the way, who's
does
seen
a very nice job, I think.
Paramount movie Coach Carter, and also has been seen in Desperate Housewives, which conveniently is just around the corner from where he's standing right now.
The Archers, I don't know if Scott picked out this outfit, but he just looks like Archer went whole hog in dressing up as a cowboy. I mean, that hat.
Well, they talk
coat.
About the heat in this episode,
yeah,
and here he is dressed in that that outfit.
There's also a mention of Blue Horns. That was a touch that Chris Black added. Again, Chris is always sort of rewriting, doing the final dialogue polish on my scripts, and he did a lot of writing on this and added sort of reference to blue horns, implying that these there are sort of alien cows on this planet, which I think is a great touch. The idea for the scene, I wrote this scene, but it was, actually the idea for the scene was Chris's. We were trying to figure out how to have Archer have to do something to stand up to this deputy, who's played by
James Parks,
who's
Deputy Bennings, who's phenomenal. Yeah,
really good. Again, real naturalistic kind of acting that you don't often get to see on Star Trek, because everybody's playing aliens that have to be very formal and get their exposition out. And here, James really gives you that sense of a guy who is a bigot, which I loved. And I worked hard to come up with, not that hard, but I worked on coming up with a name for the aliens that could be shortened into something that sounded like the N-word. They call them skags, and I was really trying to evoke a real kind of racist term. You can't ever really get it unless you're using a real racist term, but James makes it does make it sound like a bad word. His acting is so good.
Yeah, James was in Kill Bill.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's been in an episode of Deadwood, I believe, too.
Oh, yeah, I love that hat. That kind of Billy the Kid hat that he's got. Again, look at these angles, things you don't notice. Look at that.
That's awesome.
Things you don't notice when you're just sort of sitting at home watching that ad. Look at this.
Archer ad. The gunslinger. I like the way he's so getting ready, as if he's got experience shooting a six-shooter.
Exactly. And just some nice touches by the director. David really worked hard to maximize what he had to work with. And, you know, these schedules, I mean, I think they shot in 8 days, which is long for us, but, I mean, made it look like a little movie. I mean,
see the guys getting out of the way in the background, just like any old Western.
Exactly, yeah. There's also the set decoration is nice because it's like, it's Spartan. There isn't a sense that, again, there's kind of a sense that there's not a lot of stuff there, although I don't know where they got a piano. But it feels like this might be somewhere else, that they don't have a lot of belongings.
And the colors are kind of desaturated in this episode. Yeah. There's very a lot of browns and muted colors.
Absolutely. It really has there's a real palette to it.
I think Archer must have watched some westerns on movie night with Tripp.
Right. Well, Tripp has said he'd seen every John Ford western. So.
Yeah, which in the original script said Roy Rogers. I'm glad they changed that to John Ford. By the way,
Roy Rogers was mine.
Yeah,
but I thought that was kind of goofier.
But that's true.
John Ford is.
John Ford's a bit cooler.
John Ford is better, no question about it. I was hoping for a little bit more of a joke line from Tripp. That's why I put Roy Rogers in.
Could have said Hopalong Cassidy.
I could have possibly Hopalong Cassidy. I've seen every episode of The Lone Ranger. I could have done that too, or Wagon Train. So in the original script, actually, also the sheriff there really was no deputy, and ended up in the rewrite being sort of, I think one of the things you'll see in all the Star Trek series, which I think we just bored to death, was you have two bad guys. They both start off being bad guys. One of them changes his mind, is not a bad guy anymore. And so that's what we have here. Mm-hmm. Our sheriff and our deputy, both kind of bad guys at the beginning, although you get the sense sheriff ain't so bad, and then he becomes a good guy at the end, and bad guy stays bad guy. But in this case, you don't feel it. You've seen it before on Star Trek again, because these guys are acting in a very different kind of style than we're used to. They're getting to be sort of these Western guys, and they feel very natural and as real as you could possibly be in a story like this. Let's see.
Here we go with the stage 9 shoot.
Right.
Stage 9 being the swing set, the different planet every week.
Right. Planet Hell, they call it. The spaceship is. I wish that effect shot. There's a CG shot, long shot of them looking at the spaceship and. It's never quite clear enough for me. I always wanted it just to be a little lighter, so I love seeing the wrecked spaceship. the teacher, I've forgotten her,
Emily Bergel.
She does a fine job. The character originally, which we changed, originally her name was Kit, which was a reference to...
Gunsmoke?
No, actually reference to Santa Fe Trail, which is one of my favorite westerns starring Errol Flynn and Ronald Reagan. Olivia de Havilland plays a... she's not a school teacher, but she's Kit, and I thought of her. I also had one of the aliens' names was Cronin, which was a little nod to the pen name Lee Cronin, which Gene Kuhn used when he credited on Spectre of the Gun, which is the alternate planet Western Star Trek episode. Unfortunately, I went online on one of the message boards and told everybody about these names that I put in, and Brandon, just to spite me, changed them all. So, he didn't change Cooper Smith. I was very pleased about that. My little wagon train reference for anybody who remembers that.
Now, Emily in this scene. Emily is she actually was born in Milton Keynes, England, and but she grew up in Chicago. So
she does what she does very well with this role. There was originally again that we took out, which originally she was going to be half Skagarin, and the idea was for her character was that she'd been passing as human her whole life, and that finally couldn't live with herself anymore and was then sort of setting out to help the Skagarin kids to learn. It was a piece that we lost in the rewrite, which, I regret. I think it added something, would given her something else to play, another level to play that of why she's working so hard to help the Skagarin. It comes from her own sort of guilt as she lives a better life as a human being than she would as a Skagarin. She was passing, which I think would have added a level to the show, but... She does well, and it's still a nice touch that she's a quarter Skagarin, which you find out later, adds some color in the fact that as bigoted as humans are to the Skagarin, some of them are screwing them and having kids. Right. So so clearly the bigotry doesn't run that deep. It's a nice job with this wrecked spaceship set. Something the set designers have done before, I think. Although I like the idea that it's been there for, look, it's a tip to the side there. You still see the cockpit or bridge or whatever you want to call it.
And the plasma ducts, I think.
Yeah. I don't want to ignite any plasma.
T'Pol covering her ears.
Yeah, it's very similar, how many times did Spock have to cover his ears? I mean, constantly. Lieutenant, remove your helmet. When they stole clothes, they always had to find a cap for Spock. it's a problem. I don't know that we ever properly explained where they got their clothes. I think Enterprise has a seamstress.
Well,
and maybe a blacksmith to make their guns.
But this isn't the first time we've seen him go undercover on Enterprise.
No, that's true. That's true. We have sold that. The piecing. I like one of the things I do like the episode is the sort of the piecing together of the mystery of how these people got there. It's not sort of all given away. Originally, actually, Archer, although I could never make it work, Archer finds a little pulp talking about Tech so and so who defeated the Skags, and he reads the history of this pulp. Which I thought would be kind of fun to see. But here, this classroom, I think, gets the exposition out.
They start it.
Yeah, they start it.
They get rudely interrupted.
I believe she calls on this little girl whose name is Talia. My daughter's name is Talia.
Uh-huh.
Talia was actually originally the name of the princess in Precious Cargo. That got changed too, they let it stay in this one. It's good. I was going to get her name in something. So the backstory, it's interesting. In writing this story, I wanted to do something. I didn't want it just to be Cowboys in Space episode, Cowboy Planet episode. We made a joke when I wrote for Futurama about Cowboy Planets, how many Cowboy Planets there are, and. Actually, Fred Decker, who preceded me as in my job, I think I got his office on Enterprise, said about this episode, he saw it and said, you know, deep in the expanse, the Enterprise discovers cowboys. You know, it really does have... It does have the potential to be kind of hokey, but I wanted the episode to have some underpinning about bigotry and also, you know, the West. I mean, I'm not the first person to make this comment. We look in these sort of Western heroes as, you know, good guys and bad guys, and there was really brutality to life in the West. And I thought, here's a real sense that these aliens, when they captured humans, didn't realize what a violent group of people they were kidnapping. And right. These people were just so violent that they couldn't control them.
The Archer was pistol whipped there. It's kind of quick. You don't really see it, but
No, he does. He gets pistol whipped. You know, poor Archer is always getting beaten up and thrown in jail. First two seasons of Enterprise. I don't know how many times that happened. But
he's got the obligatory head scar there.
Yeah, little head scar. This guy, boy, he takes it. Probably explains why he gets so tough during that Zindi arc. I mean, he's just, you know, he's just had enough.
By the end of it.
Yeah. This is a nice scene in the jail cell, sort of getting the exposition out. I think, I read the message boards. I'm always interested in what the fans think. And I think there was sort of an expectation of, if you're going to do a bigotry story, what is it that you're paralleling? And what's interesting for me here is, there's no straight parallel because, I mean, in this sense, the Skagarans took the humans hostage as slaves, and the humans are just not going to let go of that. And I suppose there are probably a lot of people still blame the Germans for the Holocaust, or, you know, Palestinians, Jews and Palestinians still have age-old conflicts, and the Jews, Israel has the upper hand a little bit now, and there's probably some parallels to that. But more than that, I was really more concerned with doing an original sort of story. And I like the idea that it's not clean, that it's mm-hmm. not just about one person wronging another person and we've got to convince them that they're doing wrong, because the humans are wronging the Skagarians constantly. But the Skagarians did something wrong in the past. I mean, that there's always two sides to something. I like that aspect of it. Now, personally, I think that the humans are clearly in the wrong, since they've let it go on this long. They let their bigotry sort of rule them for so long. But I thought that makes it it adds a level of story. It's not clean. It's not easily tied up.
Right. So she's spending her 10 years in jail.
10 years in jail. Again, the story changed somewhat. We originally had an act four. Well, my original story, which I could never make work, was because I worked on this thing for like 4 months because Brandon wouldn't let me write it. And I think he was hoping it would go away. And by the end, he was very happy with it, and he contributed a lot of great stuff to I can't just insult the guy. But the original story, Bethany, who was named Kit then, was going to actually try to shoot the sheriff at the end of the act breaks, and that Archer was going to save him, and then he was going to have to save her because they were going to hang her. But Brandon kept singing, "I shot the sheriff," every time I pitched it, so I could never get it past him. But I thought that would be an interesting problem to put Archer in, that he had to.
Right.
She had actually really done something wrong, not just violated a law, an unfair law, but had actually tried to kill somebody out of revenge because the sheriff had hung her boyfriend, who we see at the beginning. But that obviously all changed.
Well, I was going to mention that they're drinking illegal cigar and whiskey here. Now, yes. I noticed in Star Trek, just about every liquor is illegal in some place. It's either illegal Romulan ale or
we'd all prefer prohibition. I think it's prohibition throughout the galaxy. We're making a comment. I like the idea that he keeps it around for pulling teeth.
I love this shot where the barber steps out.
Yeah.
out of the recesses there. And,
he's got kind a straight of see razor.
He's taking the straight razor and wiping it off on his.
That's all straight.
Do not mess.
That is all David Straighten, just adding a nice little touch there little sort of menacing barber man. And it's just a little background.
And it wouldn't touch. Be a Western without a barber scene.
No, no Western. No, that's sure. And
sometimes I feel this episode's almost in certain parts of it feel like High Noon, like with the, there's a fight scene coming up later in the stable, and
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of the slowness and stillness to the episode, which reflects the kind of style.
Yeah, and also you really do, it adds the sense you've gone, maybe you've gone back in time or you're on another planet. I mean, that the pacing of it is such that somehow it adds to this sort of alien feel to the whole thing. There's a nice shot of the street there.
With a barren tree. I mean, there's no fauna that's...
Nothing, yeah.
It's, flora or whatever that's... It's desolate.
Yeah. And nice, you know, a little bit of action for Archer coming up, just, you know, his little jailbreak scene that's coming up, and nice touch for him. I mean, he gets to hit the bad guy. You just want, look at that guy, you just want to hit him. I mean, he's such
a
good actor.
And again, in typical Western fight style, when you have to knock a guy out with one punch, you can.
Exactly.
But if the scene calls for a long fight,
If
it takes 10 hits.
Exactly.
So one
shot. I got to say, it didn't even look like that hard a hit. But, you know, Archer's from the future, so they figured out how to
He's in better shape.
I mean, in 100 years, Sulu can knock somebody out with a karate chop. So I think Archer's just on his way. You know, they teach that at Starfleet Academy. That line that Archer says, where I come from, we call it a jailbreak. And Bethany says, that's what we call it, too. Nice little comic touch. Chris Black added. I like that a lot.
The actress Emily there, you might have seen her in Gilmore Girls and Providence.
Probably not in that dress, though.
Probably not.
No. Well, a nice little wipe there, yeah. A little
wipe that
kind of felt like an old Western kind of touch. Now this is some exciting action coming up where they're riding on the on that wagon. I don't know why Archer had to take it through the center of town.
I guess there was only one street.
I guess there was only one street. I guess so. Some nice, you know, the nice staging of this and the
like slow-mo.
Yeah, what's a Western without some slow motion? there's just something about the exposure. I wish I knew a little bit more technical details about the exposures here that he uses, but it really...
Yeah, here and at the end, in the fight scene at the end, it's very much like Saving Private Ryan,
exactly,
that kind of feel.
Which adds sort of to this alien feel, I think, to the planet.
Yeah. Look at him, that smirk there.
Yeah.
Now the sheriff, you see, he's kind of starting to realize what's going on.
Yeah.
Which way did they go?
What I liked about...
How'd you let him get away?
Exactly. Hits the poor guy.
The great thing about Enterprise is we get to see different ship orbit angles and different directions and different colors. You know, you watch the original series and it was always the one
planet.
One direction.
Maybe a different filter on it, so red or blue. Not a lot of blood in this operating scene, but, you know, it's the future, I guess.
Yeah.
This is, I think, where we get the... Oh, one thing that got lost here. Up until the end, there was a sound of metal hitting metal when he dropped the bullet in, which was sort of a little homage to all those Western operating scenes. And I don't know how it got lost, because it was in the script. It was in the script right at the very end, I think probably in the last mixing session. They decided to take it out, but I always thought that would have been a nice touch. Because the fact that he's bothering to throw the bullet in there, I mean, the whole reason that's in there was literally just so we could hear that sound.
Which is, Now, I want you to watch this scene carefully and watch the rack focus between the two characters.
Yeah.
It's so seamless and perfect.
Yeah, no, they did a great job.
See that?
it's some nice bit of acting too. I mean, you just it really the it, he gets James really gets that real fear slash hatred slash bigotry thing going. I mean, it's really what the episode's about, and he. It's interesting to me because we, I mean, I was thinking about when I was a kid, you know, we play cowboys and Indians are always the bad guys. And it's like taking that idea that, like, people stay bad guys forever and that the Skags, even though they enslaved them, it was 200 years ago. There's nothing left of them now, yet he still hates them. He still is scared of them. And to me, just sort of talking about who we are as people and how we really let those things
how irrational us. Fears and bigotry it can be passed on
exactly and that it's you know and it's in the end it's really based on nothing it has some nice acting. I mean, again, the nice interplay between these two guys. The previous scene where in sick bay is where we had that information about her being one quarter Skagarn, and even without the story that I was wanted to tell with her, it still has a nice bit of color that they're interbreeding here. That they're for 200 years, not everybody's a bigot. Here we get the backstory about the Skagarn, and what got sort of lost here was stuff that really probably wasn't important, although the fans I know asked about, which is, you know, why the Skagarn left this colony here. You know, the Skagarn go to the trouble of setting up this colony. They're going to have humans build it. And then there's this rebellion. What happened to the rest of Skagarn? Why were they left there? And I had something in the original script that wasn't, again, really wasn't necessary, but explained it, which was they were kind of a militaristic society, and the punishment for the overthrow was you get to live with them now. So that the idea is the Skagarn, their government was sort of, their superiors were punishing them for letting this happen. And I thought it was kind of an interesting little touch, but really wasn't necessarily the story. And you heard Archer in there say they didn't realize who they'd kidnapped, and that's really the heart of the story, is talking about just how brutal humans can be. Now this shot, I don't know that there's ever been in any of the Star Trek series a shot like this. Flying over a town with this shuttlecraft landing in what, this is really the image that I really, may have been the first image I kind of thought of, which was just have a shuttle land in town and have our people get off and show these people the future. I thought, how cool is that? I don't think, literally that effect shot, I don't know that we've seen the pod with, or shuttles with CG buildings or model buildings, but this was real buildings in the foreground and that shuttle landing. I just love it. Oh, our Makos. I forgot about them.
The Makos, yeah. Dorinda Moore, season. The female Mako, or Mako number one, as she's listed, she's the sharpshooter, and she pretty much rocks in this.
Yeah, she does. It's a nice hero shot of the three of them standing in front of that pod, zooming, you know, low angle. Here we get another low angle. Archer looks like a giant. I mean, it's really something. Some nice touches here about the sheriff never really believing that Earth existed. I think that was a nice touch. I think Chris added that. And then, you know, that they're cowboys. They're locked in the 19th century, but they understand that Earth is another planet. It's far away. And I like that. It's like they've never really been able to advance. They were a limited number of people. They had limited technology. They could make furniture and eventually guns and this kind of thing. But they couldn't advance. That was another sort of piece of the story, which I think is important, which is you had a small group of people without an industrial infrastructure. They wouldn't advance past where they were. And they would be locked in time, I think. I know that, again, I read on a bunch of boards, there's a lot of arguments about that, which I thought was interesting. I think, to me, that's, you've got this isolated, very starting with a very small group of people, which over 200 years has only grown to 6,000, which is still a very small number of people. they're not going to be able to advance. They're going to build a life that's very within the limits of whatever they had when they got there. But you can't really advance technologically without a larger group of people and really the infrastructure of factories and science.
It's obviously not market day in the town because there's not that many people around.
So this is sort of the beginning of our, it's the end of Act 3. Nice shooting up that street. What's great about this, too, is you don't want to live here.
No.
I think they did a great job of making this place look kind of unpleasant. Not, you know, they're living here, and they're dressing in their dresses and whatever, but it really doesn't look like that great a place. What's great here, too, is the interplay between Archer and the deputy is, he doesn't believe in Earth, or he doesn't believe that they're from Earth. He thinks they're just in with the Skagarin, which I think logically makes sense, given whatever they know, and that it's kind of hard for them to pick, impossible, it would be impossible for them to picture Earth going on and becoming space traveling and being able to come out here. Just not something they could ever imagine. Big action set piece coming up. This is really just some great directing from David Straighten. A lot of planning went into this.
Nice slow-mo. Now, that is like everybody who's been on the Universal Studios.
Yeah, nothing special about that.
Tour, that flop there is what you get on the stunt show.
Not necessarily the most original move, and the fact that it's in slow motion.
But you got to have it in there.
You got to have it. There we go. Nice move.
That's tremendous.
I love those Mako rifles.
Yes. You'll see it in a minute when she fires up the scope.
I don't know. Did we use the scope? We used the scope in the season opener, and we used it here. I don't remember using it other times during the season. We go to the trouble of giving them those scopes and then don't use them. The gunfight's probably a little less interesting if they can get perfectly aimed shots off every time.
You think it would be completely unbalanced, this fight, with six shooters versus phasers? Phase pistols, sorry, folks.
You'd think that. But, we don't get to aim them as much. We don't get a lot of practice. Here's just a great sequence. I think this was David's idea.
I love this.
Yeah, this part right here, I think, is just great.
Boom. Which is kind of reminiscent of the bridge scene in The Wild Bunch.
Yeah.
When that explodes and they all fall.
Now here we go, right here. There's a blown-out shoulder. How often do you get to see that on Star Trek? I mean, look at that. That is just awful. Oh, God. That looks like it hurts. I mean, that's just a great... I mean, it's so much more graphic
than
we normally see on the show, and it adds just a level to this. Now, this fight scene in the barn where they fight and they wrestle and they go into the horse.
This is what reminds me a bit of High Noon.
Yeah, David, had this idea to how to do this fight scene, and production was really reticent to do it. They felt like it just too much, and he, just promised, I can do it, I can do it, and he just delivered. I mean, it's really a great fight scene in the barn, and a lot of great camera angles, and he got it done.
And Archer wins with one arm.
One arm. This touch coming up is a very funny touch that Brannon added during the rewrite, which I think is very funny. Shooting to ball is a nice surprise. I don't think it's something you see coming.
Like what?
And those Mako uniforms were pretty cool. I think that they added a nice little touch in season 3. So here's this is the shot, I think, that David really wanted to do, the going rolling under the horse.
Boy.
And then, he got a lot of, they didn't want him to do it. And he said, no, let me, I promise, we won't take extra time, and And he did it, and it's just a nice little touch.
Well-trained horse.
Yes, it is. Now, the deputy's kind of stupid in that. Just let go of the hook.
Yeah.
But otherwise, a great fight scene, and, you know, Superman Archer can fight him one-handed.
Unfortunately, the six-shooter doesn't have a stun setting.
No. So. This is a nice little scene in the observation lounge. Is that what we call it, or is this the mess hall? Is this Archer's dining room? I don't know where we are. With her looking out the window, and she sort of talks about, again, sort of the heart of the story, which is the, you know, we're down there fighting all the time, and look at how far you've come. And
she says, I can see my house from here. this could be the captain's mess, maybe. Yeah.
So,
where's Archer's scar? It's gone.
On his uniform, you mean? Or?
No, on his head.
Oh. You know, Phlox took care of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all good. The final scene of the show, her teaching the kids, was actually, might have been one of the first things that I came up with in the story, that how I wanted to end the story, was her teaching humans and Skagarin. I don't know if you can see any Skagarin kids in there. I think you can. And then the sheriff coming in because he wants to hear was kind of, I thought, just a nice little uplifting ending to this piece. And it was shot very nicely.
Yeah, the journey of the sheriff is one of the nicer things in the story, the whole arc that he makes.
Yes.
It's a wonderful story.
It is. It's nice. And Enterprise is leaving, and I'm sure they'll come back.
Well, they say they're going to come back. But
probably in a pocketbook.
Now, this was, again, is this a stock shot? Yes. Definitely leaves it wide open for a while.
Was that a stock shot? No, that was a CGI of Western Town. CGI of Western Town. I think there's some Skagarin kids. There you go. There's a Skagarin kid. So she gets to teach them both now. She's got a little pad. I had written in the script, I don't know if you can see them, there's supposed to be sort of a stack of pads there, but I guess they didn't do that. But this is a very nice shot. And
I love this.
Who wants to see a picture of the Wright brothers playing, and he raises his hand?
Yeah.
I was a nice little bit of acting there.
Great pullback here.
Yeah.
Reminiscent of even a John Ford film.
Yeah. No, just all a very nice episode, I think, produced beautifully. I mean, it's really, it's our parallel planet. It's our one parallel planet episode, and it fits story-wise with how we would do it. We explain it in a way that works for Enterprise.
That was a lot of fun. Thank you again, David,
for joining us. Oh, it was my pleasure. My pleasure. I got to go back to Family Guy now.
And best of luck with Family
Thank
Guy.
Thank you very
Another
much.
Great show. So.
Yes. All right.
We hope you enjoyed this exclusive audio commentary. Please visit StarTrek.com often for more exciting features.